Independent journalism needs protection, now more than ever. Leaving a gift to TPR in your will helps ensure thoughtful, fact-based news has a future in Texas. Learn more at tpr.org/legacy.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. More than 65,000 immigrants are being detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement as of mid-November. It's unknown how many of those have been arrested at immigration court. ICE agents have become regular features at immigration court hearings.
Crying out, "I don't want to die in Honduras," an emotional mother taken by ICE agents at immigration court Thursday. Another mother also placed in the same van. Her husband says she has no prior criminal history.
Arrests that have been caught on video by individuals, news organizations, and immigration rights organizations show that these arrests can be violent and heartbreaking. American Gateways is a nonprofit that has served the South and Central Texas immigrant community for nearly 40 years. It empowers individuals to understand the immigration court process and advocate for themselves if they do not have an attorney. Its volunteers have seen firsthand recent ICE arrests made at immigration court, including the resumption of the arrests of children. We had a chance to speak last week with Laura Flores Dixit, managing attorney for the San Antonio Office of American Gateways. She appears often at the San Antonio Immigration Court to represent clients or advise individuals who are appearing for their mandated court hearings. Flores Dixit explains what she's been witnessing there.
So beginning in late May and really since then, suddenly, there began to be a consistent daily ICE present at the San Antonio Immigration Court, where people who were lawfully presenting to attend their immigration court hearings, these civil proceedings, were suddenly being arrested after attending their hearings. The strategies and the specific context for these arrests has changed in those 6-month period. Initially, what was, at least here locally in San Antonio, what was causing people to be arrested was honestly a joint effort between ICE attorneys, immigration judges, and ICE deportation officers, and at that time, other agencies that were supporting the effort. At that time, initially, what would happen was that the ICE attorney would move to dismiss a case, and then a judge would grant it over opposition by the individual, even if they asked for a continuance to find an attorney to respond to this request to dismiss the case. And the whole intention of this was so that then people would not have a case on file and that ICE could arrest them and place them in what is called expanded expedited removal. Since then, litigation has paused the expansion of expedited removal, so they had to change their strategies. That was no longer a way that they could continue to use the immigration court as a location to arrest people and to meet, you know, these quotas that ICE has. Now, currently, at least from August until last week, there had been a pause in children being arrested at the immigration court. Throughout June and July, unfortunately, children were not immune to being arrested. And San Antonio, very unfortunately, was highlighted nationwide for having children zip-tied in the immigration court here in San Antonio. Beginning in August, we stopped seeing those arrests. But for whatever reason, in this past week, for the first time since August, saw a family arrested with children included. Because we do not work with the federal government and do not have a open line of communication with them, we can't exactly say what this change in policy is related to, though I will say it is consistent across the board with just a heightened amount of enforcement and arrests of children locally. In the past 3 weeks, there have been many, many, many families with young children who have been arrested again when lawfully presenting at ICE check-ins. We hadn't seen it come to the court yet recently, but this week we did see a family get arrested with children. Now, generally speaking, these arrests of adults, at least that had been happening, were in order to hold people in mandatory detention. In August was when kind of litigation paused the expansion of expedited removal, if I'm remembering my timeline correctly. But around that same time, there was changes in law by the Appellate Immigration Court, the Board of Immigration Appeals, that suddenly changed longstanding policy of who they determined were subject to mandatory detention. Suddenly, under a case called Matter of Yahure Hurtado, any person who at any point entered the United States without permission, even if it was 30 years ago, now at this point was going to be subject to mandatory detention and not eligible for a bond with the immigration judge. From August until now, those have been the people who we have been seeing detained in court, people who entered unlawfully at any point in time, were not really subject to the expedited removal issues. But the main takeaway is that throughout these 6 months, people have consistently been detained almost daily at the San Antonio Immigration Court. Most recently, unfortunately, until the children were being arrested again, like we saw this week, one of the very disturbing trends that we started seeing in the court was very blatant family separation, where if a family was in a case together, they would go to court. And if ICE, you know, had decided that somebody needed to be arrested that day, they would tell the parents, one of you will be arrested. Y'all can pick who, but somebody will be arrested that day. And I think it was mentioned in my declaration, but in one of these instances, you know, the instinct is generally for the mother to be the primary caregiver and to stay with the children. But once her husband had been detained in this one instance, the mother realized, I have the keys to the car, but I don't know how to drive. I don't have a driver's license. And so now she was left in this very difficult situation where she's not even going to be able to easily navigate the city despite being the sole caregiver now of her children. That's just kind of a brief summary of kind of the history of what we've been seeing over the last 6 months. And unfortunately, we don't anticipate things to significantly change in the incoming year.
Well, backtracking to a few things that you had mentioned, you did mention that anybody who is considered to be in the U.S. without any legal status, that they are subject to detention and ultimately deportation. But we need to point out that the law, unless things have changed in the last few months, which it very well could have, because things are making your head spin right now, the way things are working in the legal system. But the first time that a person enters the U.S. illegally, that's considered a misdemeanor. It's not until the second entrance that it's considered a criminal offense. Is that correct?
You know, immigration law is extremely complex because there is both a civil system, which is the system under which I've been speaking about, and it is not a criminal offense at all. None of what I've been talking about are criminal proceedings. It is a choice by the U.S. government in certain instances if they actually choose to federally prosecute somebody, but that is completely and separate and apart from immigration court proceedings, which are a completely civil matter. The vast majority of people in the United States never have criminal proceedings brought against them, and their entire immigration process is fully in this civil immigration court, meaning that no, they do not have a misdemeanor on their record. No, they do not have a felony on their record. They haven't even been charged as such. There has recently been an uptick in these federal prosecutions, but that is not the process in which I'm speaking of. And that's part of the complexity of immigration law. There are these two similar systems, but they are completely independent. And the vast majority of people who are going through civil immigration court proceedings, these deportation proceedings, do not have never been federally prosecuted and do not have any type of criminal history on their record.
Well, thanks for that clarification. Can you explain to us what is supposed to happen at an immigration court? Because what we have heard about immigration courts is there has been such a backlog of thousands of cases waiting to be heard by immigration judges. Is this also part of the government's way to deal with that backlog with these rapid dismissals of these cases?
I can't speculate as to the intentions behind the government in going through this, though I will say that that is definitely something that is happening by virtue of these dismissals, right? By initially dismissing the cases, that was a lot of cases nationwide that were just going away off the judges' dockets and eliminating some of that backlog, like you mentioned. Unfortunately, just the mere presence, the continuous presence of ICE at the courts has also unfortunately resulted in a lot of people now not showing up to court, where before that wasn't as much of an issue. There was a recent report put out by Mobile Pathways saying that in San Antonio, there are now 64% of cases have been abandoned. And that is an extreme uptick than what we had seen before, which again is very easily allowing the court's backlog to be eliminated by just ICE presence and creating fear so that people aren't attending their hearings out of fear of being detained at court. So while, again, I can't speak to the government's intention specifically of all of these things, I think that, you know, one of the primary intentions is to detain a lot of people. We know that ICE has quotas that they need to meet. It is clear that one of the results has been that a significant number of the cases on the backlog have now been dismissed or gotten rid of through some means, either abandonment, in absentia orders, dismissals earlier on in the year.
So what kind of cases are being heard in immigration court, or what kind of cases does an immigration court normally hear?
Sure. So immigration courts hear a wide variety of cases, and we haven't really touched on, you know, the other kind of attacks on asylum, which also are resulting in the backlog being diminished, because there is new case law that came out from the Board of Immigration Appeals that now allows judges to just pre-termit cases without hearing them at all if they think it's incomplete, which is really challenging given that all the forms are completely in English, must be submitted in English, and the vast majority of individuals in these civil proceedings are unrepresented because they are civil proceedings. Traditionally, in immigration court, particularly here in San Antonio, but nationwide as well, there are a substantial amount of asylum cases, people who are fleeing their countries out of fear of past persecution or future persecution. But in addition to those asylum cases of more newly arrived immigrants, there are also many cases of people who have lived here for 10, 20, 30 years even. And for these individuals, their relief can vary. A lot of times we're talking about a type of relief called cancellation of removal, which it requires for people who are not permanent residents seeking cancellation of removal, they have to have a U.S. citizen child or spouse who would suffer extreme hardship were they to be deported. And so we're not just talking about newly arrived asylum seekers. And in fact, you know, this administration and the Board of Immigration Appeals are working actively to try to really eliminate the possibility of asylum or withholding of removal protection again under the Convention Against Torture in the United States. But given the vast amount of internal apprehensions, internal arrests through all of these raids that are happening nationwide, there is increasingly people fighting their cases in detention who have been living here for 10, 20, 30 years are seeking cancellation of removal, oftentimes also adjustment of status because they have children or spouses who are U.S. citizens here and are able to petition them. As we already kind of discussed, immigration law is so complex that many people do not know what options are available to them and are only now by force being forced to go through these proceedings, unfortunately, oftentimes in immigrant detention.
Laura Flores-Dixit is managing attorney for the San Antonio Office of American Gateways, a nonprofit that assists non-citizens with immigration and legal services ahead of their immigration court dates. When we come back, Flores-Dixit emphasizes that ICE arrests happening at immigration court have deeper implications for American democracy.
I would hope that people would begin recognizing, in light of the various directives that are coming out of the federal government, that this erosion of due process, while right now it may seem limited to immigrants, has large implications for everyone in the United States.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. ICE arrests are taking place every day of individuals showing up for mandatory hearings at immigration court overseen by the Executive Office for Immigration Review, EOIR, under the Justice Department. The nonprofit organization American Gateways parks its volunteers outside the courthouse to offer advice and resources to immigrants who are uncertain about what they may encounter at their hearings. Many of those individuals are proceeding pro se, representing themselves without a lawyer. American Gateways has created the PAPA, or Pro Se Assistance Program, to empower people to represent themselves and potentially reduce the risk of detention. American Gateway's managing attorney Laura Flores-Dixit says the program grew out of the heightened immigration enforcement at immigration court.
Prior to then, for over a decade, we had operated the immigration court help desk at the San Antonio Immigration Court in the pro bono room on the third floor, which was a federally funded program that the Trump administration ended this spring. So again, they were very calculated in when they began these efforts at the court. First, they ensured that there were no legal service providers receiving federal funding present at the court on a regular basis before they launched these efforts. In response, though, we said that's fine. If we don't have a space up there, if we don't have federal funding, we will still find a way through other funding sources, through donations, to have a presence at on a regular basis at the court. And so for the past 6 months, we have been essentially tailgating at the immigration court, providing pro se assistance to unrepresented individuals appearing at the San Antonio Immigration Court. We have, I would say, two primary goals. One, informing individuals about ICE presence at the court, because while at this point many people are aware of this, not everyone is. And so in informing them of ICE presence at the court, if they, you know, choose to continue to go to their hearing despite ICE presence, which the vast majority of people do, we take down emergency contact information so that we can notify an emergency contact if they are detained, but also so that if we have capacity, we can initiate representation for that individual if they are detained. But our other primary goal here in San Antonio is to assist individuals who are eligible for virtual hearings to log in virtually so they don't even have to go up to the court and risk being arrested. Unfortunately, the judges really have, at this point, unlike earlier in the summer, have no control over what ICE does outside of their courtroom. The vast majority of time, people go to their court at this point. The immigration judge sets them for their subsequent hearing. The person leaves the courtroom thinking they will be coming in a few months or a year to their next hearing, and then ICE chooses to detain them. Because the judges have no control over what ICE does, what judges do have control over is whether or not somebody actually has to even be present in their courtroom. And so there are several judges at the San Antonio Immigration Court who allow for virtual hearings, but that information is not easily available, particularly to people who don't have attorneys. So we are in the parking lot assisting people connect to their hearings virtually so that they can lawfully continue proceeding with their cases as all of them want to without risking being detained by ICE by simply appearing lawfully for their hearing.
Well, one fact that I thought was really interesting in this declaration that you shared with us that's connected to some legal action. There are no phones allowed in these courtrooms, yet there are ICE agents allowed to be on their phones, texting or in communication somehow with ICE agents who may be outside the courtroom or outside the building, and they are receiving information on the appearance of this person whose case may have been dismissed, and therefore immediately they are arrested and detained.
In June, when the arrests started ramping up in San Antonio, we were quite shocked at the amount of repression on the use of phones and cameras that began, and even at that time, presence of observers in the courtroom spaces. Inside courtrooms, it has always been the case that use of cell phones has not been permitted. But out in the general spaces, in the lobby, in the hallway, in the pro bono room, it had never been an issue. But once ICE began arresting people on the third floor, it's very clear that they didn't want any documentation of that happening, of what it looked like, because there's generally like up to 14 ICE agents on the third floor, which is not a very wide space. So if there was pictures to be able to show what it looked like, it would look like ICE was literally throughout the entire hallway. But it's very clear they don't want the public to see the presence, the waste, quite frankly, of resources in doing that, because at times there's only been one arrest per day for a week, yet there's 14 agents there spending ungodly amounts of taxpayer dollars for no reason. But they don't want that release, right? And so we were very quickly told, and there was signage put up, that there was no to be no phone usage, no cameras at all by reporters, by anyone on the third floor. And admittedly, EOIR is within its right to enact these types of policies, but it was completely inconsistent as to what had been happening before, which is concerning given kind of the impetus of the change, which was the heightened enforcement at the court itself. There was threats of police being called if phones were out. And again, one of the most shocking things in this change in policy is the inconsistent application. EOIR, the immigration court, is under the Department of Justice. They are completely separate and apart from ICE, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security. It seems inconsistent for ICE to be able to be utilizing their phones in confidential spaces where no advocates can do the same, when it's very clear that they're just trying to, you know, make sure that they're detaining people. And it feels very unfair, and the community understands that as well.
Do the judges have any control over that? Because it almost seems like maybe perhaps it's a strength in numbers. There's just too many of them to say no to. Who would have ultimate control over that?
So with regard to the policy within the San Antonio Immigration Court itself and how it's applied, that, you know, is largely enforced by the court administrator, and local policies are enacted by the assistant chief immigration judge locally, which is Melissa Garcia, based out of Laredo. Overall, you know, they're getting their marching orders from the Department of Justice. And I know that nationwide, there has been increasing crackdowns on access to spaces. And, you know, every building is different. We are able to take photographs and do stuff on the fourth floor, but there's only one courtroom there. People aren't generally up there. You know, they're using everything to their advantage. They're using every type of building. In California, for example, I used to practice out in California. The immigration court in Sacramento, I know, is an entirely federal building. So people, like, there's really not much that people can do because that is an entirely federal building. And the government is very much using whatever resources it can to hide the atrocities that are happening at the immigration court.
And you talked about the buildings. This is another thing I thought that was really fascinating. The San Antonio Immigration Court, at least, it's not a courtroom. It's not like the courthouse here for the county. It is inside of a private building, a commercial building that's housing other private businesses or non-government offices. And you mentioned the third floor, and I thought that was really interesting because that third floor, that used to be a space for some advocates, I understand, who might be able to assist immigrants such as maybe like American Gateways, but it's been commandeered by ICE since then, correct?
Yeah. So our immigration court helped us. We used to have printer, scanner, materials in the pro bono room, and we're welcomed by the immigration court to inform people of their rights. And to be honest, the immigration court window at times still sends people down to us in the parking lot because our services truly aim to help make the process more accessible to unrepresented individuals, which the vast majority of them are. And so by doing that, we make the court and staff's lives easier when people are submitting things the way that they need to be submitted and know what they need to do. So the court, the vast majority of the staff has articulated to us and have expressed that they understand our utility and wish that we could be present. But this is very much, you know, a nationwide effort to make it more difficult for people to know what's happening in immigration court and be able to move through the proceedings in an effective way. We used to have space on the third floor, even though it was still part of the federal building because we were a federal contractor. But like you said, it is a private building. And so actually beginning in January, we are now a tenant and we'll be on the first floor offering our services in the first floor. There is another law office in that building. There's like an optometrist in that building. It is very much a mixed purpose space, which kind of made it a very unique location for all of this to be happening because there have also been restrictions that have been implemented by the building manager, for example, regarding access to media and other observers being able to photograph because things were getting so contentious early on in June. That being said, you know, we are very much appreciative of the building manager as well because in addition to restricting the general public's ability to take photographs within the private building, he also restricted ICE's ability to make arrests in public spaces. And that's why now arrests only happen on the third floor, as opposed to in the building lobby.
So are American Gateways volunteers still going to be in the parking lot for several days out of the week like you currently are once that occurs, once you're on that first floor space?
So we will not be in the parking lot offering services anymore. We'll be in our office space offering services, but there will be signage throughout the building and we'll have volunteers helping guide people to our office space as well.
Well, Laura, do you have any final words, anything that I didn't get a chance to ask you while we've been talking that you'd like to bring up in this conversation?
I would just say that, arrests at the immigration court, arrests of non-citizens appearing to their ICE check-ins when there has been no change in making them now seem like they wouldn't be continuing on with their cases and continuing to present to their hearings and their check-ins is really an affront to due process in the United States. And I think that I would hope that people would begin recognizing in light of the various directives that are coming out of the federal government that this erosion of due process, while right now it may seem limited to immigrants, has large implications for everyone in the United States. And this is not an issue that should only be important to the immigrant community or mixed status families, but to all Americans in the United States.
Well, some people might feel kind of helpless. Is there anything that you might recommend that somebody might do to kind of assist with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think talking to Congress, your elected officials, letting them know that you feel this, being active in your community. There's a lot of different grassroots organizations that have launched to try and court observe and provide support to immigrant communities in this space, but also attending protests and things like that to make sure that people's voices are heard. As you mentioned earlier, there is strength in numbers. And I think that the more that the federal government continues to hear from the American public that they are opposed to what is happening in this country is extremely important.
Laura Flores-Dixit is a managing attorney with the San Antonio office of the nonprofit American Gateways, a volunteer network of attorneys, doctors, psychologists, and other professionals who provide education, advocacy, and legal services to immigrants and refugees. Flores-Dixit and her colleagues have been witness to dozens of arrests at San Antonio Immigration Court since late May. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.